Driving plays a big part in driving the local economy. It helps us all get where we're going and creates good jobs close to home. At Cenovus Energy, our refineries in Toledo and Lima are a reliable domestic source of gasoline, diesel, and jet fuel. Plus, more than 2,300 employees and contractors work for us here in Ohio. See how we're helping local communities move forward at Cenovus.com. Driving plays a big part in driving the local economy. It helps us all get where we're going and creates good jobs close to home. At Cenovus Energy, our refineries in Toledo and Lima are a reliable domestic source of gasoline, diesel, and jet fuel. Plus, more than 2,300 employees and contractors work for us here in Ohio. See how we're helping local communities move forward at Cenovus.com.
Right. Fun stuff.
Jason, I want to let you know I shit the bed on Mass Effect 3.
What do you mean?
Well, I apparently upon, even though this is the Legendary Edition, you still have to have that certain amount of war effort or war assets in order for Shepard to survive.
It depends on what ending you did. Because what color did you pull?
Well, here's the thing. I didn't pull any color. I got into the, the Crucible. And then, of course, you know, she like passes out in front of the machine and Anderson dies. So like Anderson died. I passed out on the machine. It lifts you up and you go in this like elevated area where this little ghost boy is. And he's basically like the soul of the Crucible. And yeah. I don't know. And you're talking with him and you've got to make a choice. And I'm like trying to make a decision like, okay, which route is going to be the way out of here to survive? And ended up not activating.
You walked away from it?
I said, you know what? I'm just going to continue this war. And you know, I ended up not activating the Crucible.
Yeah. So you took like the worst way out you possibly could. And the cycle continues.
Continues.
The whole game, the whole series leads up to, you know, make a choice.
And I chose not to make a choice.
Coward. Thank goodness.
Yeah, I completely effed the bet on that one, man. It was like, I got there like, okay, the cycle continues. I'm like, wait a minute, what do you mean the cycle continues? Rewind. I'm like looking for the rewind button on this.
Hilarious.
Dumbass. But the nice thing is that it, when it goes through the end credits and everything, it deposits me back to the last scene before I attack the elusive man's base. I can always run it back again and redo the finish.
Yeah.
So
that's awesome.
But yeah, I thought I'd give you an update on that. I was gonna text you that night, but it was like almost 10:30. I'm like, this dude don't want to hear from me at 10:30 at night. So
no, especially if you give me some disappointing news.
Funny, I shit the bed on the end. Anyway, Jason's got it. I got to tell Jason this live because his reaction is going to be.
I'm so ashamed of you, man.
Oh, I'm ashamed of me. I was pissed. I'm like, I just sat through three effing games.
I shouldn't even tell you that if you max out your war assets, there's a third choice.
No, I did some research while I was waiting on you guys and I was working on this model plane. I was doing some research looking at it. I'm like, what is the best possible ending here? And they're like, yeah, there is a third option, but you got to have like 8,000 war effort. And I'm like, how the hell am I going to get that?
The cool thing is when they actually play out, the kayfabe of them is that there really is no like best ending.
Yeah.
It's like, some endings, you know, you're kind of playing God. And then some endings, you know, you make a noble sacrifice. And then, but like, you know, sacrifice a bunch of stuff. But it's very interesting.
I'm absolutely in love with that series. And I'm embarrassed that it took me this long to find it. And for as perfect as a game as I thought number two was, number three doesn't lag far behind for me.
You're listening to the Mindless Wrestling Podcast, now part of the ChairShot Radio Network, on thechairshot.com. Remember, always use your head.
You look like a dude who should be pumping my fucking gas.
This isn't doing it for me. I'm not getting enjoyment out of this.
He was a before the bell rings all-star.
...2024. This is the Mindless Wrestling Podcast, part of the ChairShot Radio Network. You can find us on thechairshot.com, where we remind you and encourage you to always use your head. I'm going to go around the room here and introduce this cast of characters like I do on every single episode, starting with the resident high flyer of the Mindless Wrestling Podcast, hailing from the Purple Haze and Cloud Nine, Bucky's tag team partner, a man destined to go through a barbershop window. Jason, sir, how are you tonight?
I am wonderful, friends. It is wonderful to be back on another wonderful. I'm going to use wonderful to death. It's great to be back on another wonderful episode of the Mindless Wrestling Podcast.
Episode 193, for those of you that are keeping track, we are ticking closer and closer to a milestone, 200 episodes. Who would have thought we'd have made it this far?
My goodness, not me.
It's a lot, man. It's a lot. And there may be a couple episodes prior to that where it was just me and Rob, but I think I started the count when we became a three-man weave. And speaking of Rob, from the Rob the Genius podcast, he is the father of facts and figures, the deacon of data, the minister, and I've lost my entire ass on this whole thing, the official shoot bear of the Mindless Wrestling Podcast, and the man with the golden shovel, Mr. Rob. How are you, sir?
All right.
Oh, my God. I fumbled and tripped and fell all over that one. We are off to a terrible start here tonight. I love it. It wouldn't be this show without some type of snafu on my part. I am the man with the award-winning and holy beard, DJ, and I know I stopped talking about it a couple months ago. I have been in contract negotiations with the award-winning beard now since middle of last year. I think we finally reached a conclusion, probably in the next week or so, going to be sending the beard back down to developmental for a slight gimmick change. I'll let you guys know how that pans out. Probably, if not next episode, the episode after. But, yeah, definitely a little bit of a change coming for the award-winning beard. I know people have been waiting for an update on that one. Guys, we're going to talk Backlash. Backlash was this weekend from France. Got the premium live event, WWE. I'm going to kick things off here and say I thought it was an amazing show. Top to bottom, I think there were a couple little missteps and misfires that we can pick apart tonight. But all in all, I enjoyed it. I loved the fact that it was in the middle of the day. Got to have my snacks, got to have a little drink, got to, you know, and then wind down afterwards. And that was good for me because I had a terrible night's sleep Friday night. And so I was cooked. Like, I was up at like 4 o'clock on Saturday morning. And if this had been a nighttime premium live event, I probably wouldn't have made it through to the end. Rob, what were your thoughts on the overall show, just the vibe of the show and everything?
Oh, it was a good time. I thought it was a good show overall. The afternoon thing was cool. And there were some people kind of didn't like, well, some people I talked to on Twitter kind of, they wished it had been maybe another match or two, but this time around, they kept it to 3 hours. Cause my thing with the shorter, if you're only going to have five matches, if you want to do that, that's fine. But we need to get out of here in 3 hours. Cause you know, some of these pay-per-views, they've had only five matches and they've still gone almost 4 hours and it's like, okay, really? But he kept it tight this time. So, you know, and that was good. And because I think some of those ones that went longer, there were a bunch of ads and a bunch of other stuff going on. They didn't really do that this time. So that helps it because when those shows are overstuffed with ads and all that other type of stuff, then to me, it takes away from it. So, but I thought for what they got in was overall a very good show. And, you know, and again, good way to spend Saturday afternoon.
Yeah, I thought one thing before I kick it over to Jason, I thought it was very well paced. I have to agree with you on that. I thought the matches were put in the right order on the card. Again, as we talk about the matches, I'll explain what I mean there a little bit more. But yeah, overall, I think there was more emphasis on the in-ring competition, which Triple H has been kind of slowly transitioning towards. It was a little less fluff, and it just flowed better. Like, you know, the next thing I know, we're at the main event. I'm like, holy crap, this doesn't feel like 2.5, almost 3 hours. So, Jason, kicking it over to you. Overall thoughts of the show before we get into the card. What did you think? And you're on mute. And I think Jason.
Okay, no, there you go. Nope, I got it. So, I thought the show was awesome. It perfectly good for a Backlash. Exactly what we kind of expected. You know, the crowd was incredible. I think that deserves its own little segment. Like, yes. Obviously, these international crowds have not disappointed, and France continued that trend. Lyon continued that trend. So, yeah, if you want to keep going over there, let's keep going over there. That's fine.
Yeah, I think you're going to see more of a trend, and I think the French, like, everybody, there was maybe a couple of people that moaned and complained about the French crowd, mainly because they didn't understand a couple of the chants that they were doing. But all in all, man, that crowd really, I think I posted on the timeline, I said, this crowd is what you do when you don't give a F about the IWC crap. You know, when you just go there, as our friend Jay likes to say, watch this stuff like a nana or a kid, that's what France did. They were there to be entertained. They were there to enjoy a great wrestling show, and they did that. And they really showed, as a lot of the international audiences have, what we're doing wrong as American audiences. We try to hijack the show. We try to take it over. We try to make it our own. Or if something's just not hitting, we completely try to sabotage it, which I think is absolute lunacy, to be honest with you. And, you know, we'll talk about it a little bit more. There was the women's tag team match got a little off the rails in some spots, and that crowd still found a way to try to enjoy it. And I think that's important. They didn't pretend to know what they were watching. They didn't pretend to know the backstage stuff. They didn't pretend to know all the, you know, all the little, you know, who's who and what's what of how WWE runs. They just enjoyed the show, and it was fun.
Yeah, man. I mean, and they got all the chance. I sometimes, you know, get annoyed by the chance if they're going all throughout the show. But aside from when AJ Styles was out there, they really didn't go crazy. And once you found out the AJ Styles thing, that was kind of cool. Mm-hmm. So, yeah, it was awesome. It was a great show and a great crowd.
They sang Randy Orton's theme. We're used to him doing Cody Rhodes. Yeah. Okay, we're used to him singing Kingdom, and that's cool. But when they were out there singing Randy Orton's song for the Open, I was like, what is this? This is amazing. Like, this is cool to me.
Oh, yeah, man. Yeah, absolutely. And that's – because I don't think I've ever seen that happen.
I haven't either. Not on a live – they may be doing it at like a house show or something, but I've never seen that at a televised event. So, all right, we got anything else on the card before we get right into the card itself?
No, I'm good. We can all get right back in, right into it, man.
All right, well, so Jason's going to take over the floor here. He's got the card pulled up. I'm going to let him run down everything, and we'll talk about it.
So next up, we had Solo Sikoa and Tama Tonga as the Bloodline fighting Kevin Owens and Randy Orton in a which quickly devolved into a street fight match where anything goes. So these guys took that quite to heart, and holy crap. And I want to say it first. Thank you. Kevin Owens gave Tama Tonga a super twisting brain buster through four chairs. There's a sentence I never thought I'd say.
Yeah.
So there you go. At WrestleMania Backlash, by the way. So yeah. Wow. Rob?
Oh, so all right. Gotta give props to Tama Tonga. Just jumping right in and fitting right in. You know, I mean, this was his first WWE match. And he picked a doozy to debut, didn't he? But look, he got right in there and, you know, he jumped in with both feet. And he didn't look the least bit out of place in there with those guys. And look, he took a whole lot of crazy bumps. God bless him. And because look, I mean, look, I'm sure because you know he and Roman have kind of joked with each other a little bit back and forth on Twitter in the past. So look, they're probably all just happy as hell for him to finally be there to jump in the pool with them. And I'm sure he's real happy to be there now too. And so, I mean, I really love the way Nick Aldis came out there at the beginning, because when they opened up with the brawl at the beginning, he just came out and was like, all right, you guys want to do this? You guys want to do this? All right, we're going to do it your way. Let's go. and Nick Aldis has just been excellent. That was a higher way out of left field. Nobody saw that coming.
And he's been excellent.
Yes, and he's been a wonderful addition to SmackDown.
Let me pause you there, Rob. I want to kind of put him and Adam Pearce over because Adam Pearce, to his credit, has been excellent in this general manager role as well. A lot of times the general manager role, when they did it with Foley and they did it with Angle and they did it with Austin, it just felt gimmicky. Like these guys actually both feel like they're legitimately part of WWE management and not just a talent that they shoved out there on TV with a title. You know what I mean?
Yeah, because honestly, like Mick Foley, it almost felt like, man, sometimes it felt like they were giving him a job because he needed to pay his bills or something.
Right. With Adam and Nick, it feels genuine.
Yeah.
And it also helps that Adam looks like Nick Aldis looks like he could still go. Like he could rip the suit off and then, you know, throw hands with anybody out there right now.
Oh, yeah. He's the same age as a lot of the guys. I mean, he's only like 36, 37.
Yeah, he's not that old.
Yeah, he was just working before he came there. And we know one day it's going to happen.
Yeah, it's coming.
And to be honest, and you know, the Nick Aldis character that I've seen in NWA and all that, I don't think it would have really played particularly well in WWE. I think people would have found it boring.
Yeah.
But I think this is a perfect avenue to, you know, for when he finally does get in the ring. And right. It'll have some meaning and all of that. And that's going to be a big moment when it happens.
Yeah. So I know we went on a sidebar there, but.
Yeah, I know. But I do want to put him over. He's just been doing such a great job. And so, yeah, I mean, this match was crazy. I mean, and for me, it was probably the best match of the night for me, which, of course, makes it difficult for everything else to follow, unfortunately. But they just went, they went so crazy out there. And they threw us a curveball because everybody was expecting Jacob Fatu, and instead it was Tongaloa, Tama Tonga's brother.
Nobody saw it. I don't care who you are, nobody had that on their bingo card Saturday.
Because everybody thought that he was still under contract in New Japan. There had been no news about him leaving because there were a bunch of reports about Tama's contract being up and leaving and all of that. There were no reports about Tongaloa's contract situation, so nobody saw that coming.
Yeah.
And actually, I mean, it's a better fit because they're, you know, they've been tag team partners for years, and it would actually make more sense than to bring Jacob in there out of the blue. So, and, you know, we're still waiting on Jacob. We're still expecting him to show up at some point. But, you know, having, you know, Tama and Tonga there together, that was an excellent way to finish off the match. And I'm still hoping for Dad to show up, and their dad is Haku. I'm hoping for the eventual Haku run in so we can see the Tongue and Death Grip one more time.
I would love to see those two versus the Usos with Rikishi in one corner and Haku in the other as like the hype man. That's like a dream thing for me, man.
Now, just the funny thing is, now seeing Haku do some of these shoot interviews. Now he's just such a jolly fellow. You know, seeing him laugh.
Oh, yeah. Now I forget what he was watching. He watched the Shockmaster.
Yeah,
it was his reaction to the Shockmaster.
Yeah, because he had never seen it before, so he was. it was so nice and wholesome, and it was just so funny.
It was great. But yeah, this match was a surprise. Because I like that they surprised us with it. They didn't just call it a street fight, that they went out there. They were supposed to have a legitimate tag team match. And then, you know, all four guys. And instead of throwing the match out, Nick Aldis threw the rule book out. And the violence was on the menu Saturday night. It was absolutely incredible. Guys were taking some crazy bumps. And it was a lot of fun. Again, I agree with Rob. This was probably my match of the night.
And to be honest, I wasn't really looking forward to, like, well, I guess going in, I was kind of like, okay, well, you know, they'll do the thing and then, you know, we'll get to run in and whatever. And so when they changed it to the street fight, to me, that sent my interest all the way up to 11.
Yeah.
And that was, and it was the right call. And again, for me, it was best match of the night, which of course, you know, it sucks for everybody that has to follow it, but you know.
But follow it they did. Jason, what was the next match?
So next up, Bayley defended her WWE Women's Championship against Naomi and Tiffany Stratton in a triple threat match, which was awesome. I had a ton of fun. Everybody showed up and showed out. And we, you know, it was everything you expected, except I did expect some sort of double cross or something from Naomi at the end. Cause they really took it to the finish line. Like, oh shucks, put her there, pal. So when Bayley emerged victorious. So, but no, inoffensive, and we had a great time. Then everybody else got to show out, and Naomi's entrance was incredible again. So DJ?
Yeah, when I say that the first match was my favorite match of the night, it beats this one by a very, very slim margin. Because two premium live events in a row, Bayley showed the world why she's as good as she says she is. And that's not taking anything away from Naomi, not taking anything at all away from Tiffany Stratton. Both of those girls were fantastic. But Bayley is out here reminding everyone how good she is. And she, all three women showed us on Saturday night. Like, they really did. I thought the match was fun. It was a lot of really good wrestling in there, and Tiffany Stratton proving that she belongs out there. And I think in 2 years, she's going to be an incredible, incredible star on that roster.
There you go, Rob.
And I agree with everything you guys said. And yeah, I think it's good for you to note and just say what you did. Cause I mean, a lot of people are already, well, some people we talked to on Twitter are already trying to rush things with her. You know, like, well, she needs to win the title this year, you know.
No.
Nope.
And also, but I think they very smartly haven't presented, like, if you notice, there's a difference the way they presented her and Carmelo and Bron Breakker. Like, Bron Breakker is the one that is being presented like he's just going to kill everybody.
He's doing squash matches.
Yeah, and so he's the one you expect to, if one of them is going to win something this year, he would probably be the one you would expect because that's how they're presenting him.
Mm-hmm.
Whereas, I mean, Tiffany is being presented as much as like of a TV character as a wrestler. So, and I think for her, that's good because that means that, she already lost the match to Naomi. So now you don't have to worry about, you know, the first time she loses a match, oh, they killed her momentum, you know.
Yeah, there's nothing to protect.
Right.
Like, she's just out there working, and that's perfect for her right now.
Right, and her, you know, eventually she's going to be, you know, do some low-down, dirty, rotten scoundrel kind of stuff anyway. And so, because the way you're presenting her, not as, you're presenting her as somebody who's going to be cheating to win somewhere down the road.
Plus, so, did I read properly? I don't know if you guys read this. Is Tiffany Stratton training for another body, like a powerlifting or a bodybuilding competition?
I think that might have been Mandy. I think I saw something about Mandy Rose doing
it. Mandy Rose. See, I thought it was Tiffany Stratton. I could be wrong. Like you said, I don't always like read these things all the way through, so I may have been misinterpreting, but I thought I read somewhere that she was, but I could be wrong.
But I think they're presenting her the right way. And plus her personality as a character is one where she should not be winning everything all the time because she's going to be throwing tantrums and stuff sometimes, right? And so I think the way they're presenting her is so far is the right way. And because it matters when you bring people up, you got to present them the right, because if you present them the wrong way, or if you just don't do much of a presentation at all, then you can really leave people just kind of twisting in the wind. So I think they're doing a good job with her so far, and it was a good match. I mean, the ending came in a little bit, I guess the ending was a little abrupt for me because I didn't quite see how it ended. But that's the only thing, really. I mean, as far as things to nitpick or whatever for me.
Yeah. Okay.
Yeah. So moving on, we had the the World Heavyweight Championship match. We had Damian Priest defending against Jey Uso. So, I mean, this match was fine, and it gave us everything we expected. You know, Judgment Day came out, did the Three Stooges thing, but still somehow everyone's getting mad at everyone, but somehow they still put it together enough to beat Jey. And, you know, Priest retains, and Judgment Day's mad at each other again, even though they made up the next day. Rob.
Yeah, I thought it was fine. You know, I mean, Jey's entrance was just outstanding. That might be entrance of the year so far.
Yeah, that was incredible.
Oh, yeah, the match was fine. Yeah, I do have some issues kind of the way they're presenting Damian as champion. So I think it's time they need to break him away from those guys, I think, because to me, it's kind of dragging him down a little bit. I think, he should be presented a little more dominant as a figure.
Guy's 6'6", 6'7".
Well,
yeah.
To be fair, I think this match and the subsequent, oh shucks, we're sorry, Damian thing that they did on Monday, I think we're heading in that direction.
Okay, I hope so, because they need to get there, because it's a little too slapstick comedy-ish for me, even, comedy.
They're heading for some sort of splinter.
Yeah, and so right now, I think right now is not helping him right now. And he's kind of he needs to be, because in not too long, in another month or two, he's going to have to stand in there with Drew McIntyre and CM Punk, right? And he's going to have to be able to, you know, not look like a substitute teacher standing in there with those two guys.
Yeah, as you like to say, right now, as presented, he looks less than.
Yes. And so he's going to, whether it's next month or the month after that, he's going to be standing across from Drew McIntyre and CM Punk. You know, one or both of them. And, you know, if they have any real lofty aspirations for him, then he's going to have to level up. I mean, they're going to have to level him up in how they're presenting him.
Now, it's nothing he's doing wrong. Let's be clear. This is not a knock on Damian Priest at all. We're very high on Damian Priest here. It's the presentation that they're giving him right now.
Yeah.
Time to shed the dead weight, brother.
Yep.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, it's time. It's time for him to stand up there on his own. And because I think right now it is hurting him right now.
It would have been fine if Rhea was there on the other end to balance everything and be like, haha, we have all the belts. But now it's just him and his goons.
Yeah, they kind of look like Imperial Stormtroopers, you know.
Yeah.
And, you know.
Meanwhile, if the medicine goes down so much easier if, honestly, they're helping both of them win. Which I think might have been the plan at some point.
Yeah.
So.
I probably feel a little bit more strongly about this match than my partners do. I liked it. And when I talked earlier at the beginning of the show about the pacing of the show, I looked at it this way. The first match was a car crash. The second one was a speed race. And then they slowed things down in this match. And it worked because people needed to catch their breath. And you never want to look at this as like the death slot match on the card, but it kind of was after what we just went through with the first two matches. Yeah. So to their credit, they really went out and had a good match. And that methodical pace it works more for Damian Priest's character. He's somewhere, I liken him in pacing and match speed somewhere between Razor Ramon and The Undertaker. Like, he's not quite as fast as Razor, but nowhere near as methodical as The Undertaker. He's found a good balance. Jey Uso is an interesting discussion, and we're going to take another little sidebar here, because when I was sitting there thinking about it over the week, you know, I'm looking at Jey and I'm looking at Jimmy, and a lot of times we say, okay, these guys are twins. How is one guy completely lapping the other one in terms of popularity and in terms of how he just managed to latch onto a thing? He found a thing that people latched onto, and he's run with it, and it's become so viral and so organic. And then I started thinking of all the great brother tag teams through history that I, you know, that I can come up with. And there was always one. You know, you look at Brett and Owen, you look at Scott and Rick, you look at Booker T and, you know, Stevie Ray, you know, going down the list of brother tag teams, there's, you know, both guys were incredible together, but there was always one clear cut star who found something, found a niche that the crowd latched onto and just became a bigger star. And Jey Uso's managed to do that.
Yeah, exactly. And he's another one to keep an eye on now, because, you know, I think we're rapidly approaching that point where he needs to win something.
Yeah, he's not had a singles title yet. I mean,
even if it's just Money in the Bank, he needs to win something, you know, because otherwise they're kind of squandering what they have here.
Yeah. The only thing I would say with Jey Uso, and I told you guys this in the chat, please stop throwing working punches. Jey, please stop throwing working punches. And yeah. I love Jey Uso to the moon and back, and then he throws a punch, and I'm like, God damn it.
Those are Samoan fists of steel, brother. You show some respect.
Well, he needs to put some mustard on that steel, because I just don't buy it when he punches people, man. I buy into every other thing he does. I don't buy into his punches, and I hate that.
Well, that's fair. So next up, we have the tag team match for the WWE Women's Tag Team Championship. We had the Kabuki Warriors defending their titles against Bianca Belair and Jade Cargill. This match was a lot of fun. It got wonky towards the middle, and I'm sure we're going to get into that. And then, in a shocking turn of events to me, Bianca and Jade won. So I thought if we were going to get there, it was at least going to be one of these, you know, bumpy roads, you know, with cheat to win. You know, get okie doke down a one, and then we'll win it in the States or something. But nope, they just pulled the trigger and went for it. So kudos for that. And I'm, you know, not offended at all by that decision. So here, here. Rob?
Well, I guess now we know now that Asuka's been working hurt. So even if they'd originally thought about, you know, waiting a month, they just had to do it.
Good point.
This match has been a quite the subject of discussion in a couple of places. Two on the internet.
To put a pause there, I did an immediately following Backlash episode with PC Tunney of DWI, and, you know, sometime guest host on here. And if you guys want to listen to that, you can go to thechairshot.com. But we broke this match down a little bit, and I didn't, again, we're talking, we literally went live like 5 minutes after the premium live event ended. So I didn't have a lot of the details. Did not know Asuka was hurt. So we had a discussion about it. Rob, go ahead and finish, and then I'll give you my thoughts on it.
Okay. Well, I will say the match was like 17 minutes. I felt that was a bit long.
Probably about 5 minutes too long, especially if your ring general is hurt. And you've got, and this is not a knock on Jade, but you've got Jade who is still kind of being brought along. That's way too much time. You're exposed way too much out there.
Yeah, because look, I mean, I think right now she's probably got, okay, you're doing these five things, and then that's what you're doing in the match, you know. And yeah, I thought the match was a little too long for that. Because, I mean, God forbid Bianca had gotten hurt and then Jade had to go do more stuff.
Yeah.
I mean, you know, but thankfully that nothing like that happened. It's been, Yeah, yeah, because it got really kind of weird later. But no, you go ahead first, and I'll.
So without, and like you said, I'm going to break it down clinically, like I did with Tunney. This is again not knowing that Oscar was injured. A lot of people that I saw on my timeline immediately looked at Jade because there was a spot in the match where everything just fell apart. It's like 2/3 of the way through the match. There's this like 2 to 4 minute. It just is a mess, and Jade is out there trying her heart out, like honest to God, trying her heart out to do whatever she has been shown to do and knows to do from what they had in the production meeting, you know. But in her head, you know, we've got to get to this next spot. We've got timing cues. Jason talked about this through his, you know, best friend of the Mindless Wrestling Podcast, Dijak. A lot of times these veterans will go out there with ring cues, and they bring the younger, more green talent along through these time cues. I'm sure a lot of that was going on in this match. And Jade in her head is like, okay, we have time cues at X point in the match. I need to do this. Is X point in the match. I need to do that. And then when it fell apart, she was like, okay, I got to do these, but it looked awkward. A lot of that's not her fault. I look at the pivotal part in the match with me where I saw things fall off the rails is when Kairi Sane, of all people, is in the ring and the ref is telling her, you're not the legal person. Okay, that's fine. That's your job. You're the ref. But then the next thing is he allows Kairi to continue the match as if she's legal. The ref's job at that point is to restore order. So I lay at least the first mistake on the shoulders of the ref. At this point, the ref should have gotten Kairi out of the ring, should have gotten Asuka in the ring. And again, this is all me not knowing that Asuka may have been hurt, not knowing how immobile Asuka may or may not have been. If Asuka is the one with the most experience in the ring general, she should have come in and slapped on a rest hold and brought that match back in. It's like, okay, let's slap, because this is what you do. And this is the downside of calling a lot of these matches in the back, because you have this expectation of what the match is going to look like. If you've got 17 minutes, it's like, okay, at 5 minutes, we're going to be here. At 10 minutes, we're going to be there. At 15, we're going to be there. And then we're going into the finish. You know, so you've got this laid out like that. But when you have someone who can call it in the ring like Asuka can, she can go in there, slap a rest hold, and say, okay, look, we need to reel this back in. Now, it was brought to my attention by Rob that there may have been a point where Asuka tried to do that. Like she was trying to communicate with the other and I don't really know what kind of overall experience, but I'm just looking at WWE production experience. She goes to the other veteran in the ring, and that's Bianca Belair.
Yeah.
And she tries to get to Bianca like, okay, we need to bring this back in. This is our job. You know, Kyrie's still learning our ropes. Jade is still learning everything with us. You and I need to bring it back in. And for whatever reason, that just didn't happen. And then they were trying to get to the big pivotal spot where the Kabuki Warriors had both girls locked up in an arm bar, and the girls were supposed to stand up and power out. And I realized that was the big emotional high spot of the match, but they fumbled to get there. But I really can't hold a lot of that on the talent, because the first pivotal mistake I saw was from the ref, not.
Driving plays a big part in driving the local economy. It helps us all get where we're going and creates good jobs close to home. At Synovus Energy, our refineries in Toledo and Lima are a reliable domestic source of gasoline, diesel, and jet fuel. Plus, more than 2,300 employees and contractors work for us here in Ohio. See how we're helping local communities move forward at Synovus.com. Driving plays a big part in driving the local economy. It helps us all get where we're going and creates good jobs close to home. At Synovus Energy, our refineries in Toledo and Lima are a reliable domestic source of gasoline, diesel, and jet fuel. Plus, more than 2,300 employees and contractors work for us here in Ohio. See how we're helping local communities move forward at Synovus.com.
Create the deck of your dreams now at Menards. Spend less time maintaining your deck and more time enjoying it. With UltraDeck low-maintenance composite decking from Menards. It's easy to install and built to last. Plus, get free estimates fast with our deck design program in-store and on Menards.com. Save big on UltraDeck. and check out more great deals happening now at Menards. Save big money at
Menards. Bringing the match back where it should have been.
Yeah.
Yeah, that was my untrained amateur eye one. Because I don't know who to blame, what's going on, who's in charge, whatnot. So I'm just going to say everyone is to blame equally for not knowing who's legal, because, you know, that's kind of everyone's job. But also the ref. At that point, when everything started to go off the rails, he should have just been like, you're legal, you're not. Hey, push you to the side. Like, okay, you need to go back over here. Right. Again, not knowing that Asuka was possibly hurt and being attended to and whatnot. So maybe they were just buying time for her to, you know, figure that out. But yeah,
according to Nia Jax, Asuka was more hurt than anybody even knew. Like, she could barely walk around the back.
Yeah, well.
She gave, like, this list of things, and then she's like, she's also been doing this, working house shows, and doing all this other stuff. So, I mean, you know, I'm not going to dump on anybody in this match. At the end of the day, the match was fun. You know, I had a good time. I thought Jade looked spectacular. Bianca always looked spectacular. And I love the Kabuki Warriors. Yes, there was a snafu in the middle of the ring, in the middle of the match. Did they recover? Was the finish absolutely fire? You bet your ass. That finish was on point, man. That just series of moves that Jade did on Kairi to put her away was phenomenal. And, you know, how we got there, it was a little messy in some spots, but as a person who shall not be named has been notoriously famous for saying they only ever remember the finish, and the finish was awesome.
There it is. So last up, we had Cody Rhodes successfully defend his undisputed WWE Championship against AJ Styles in a very fun, frenetic 20, you know, they gave us more than 25 minutes. So it was fun. And I popped to the moon for the Cody's super Cody cutter. That was awesome.
No, it was such good stuff.
I love that shit. So yeah, and it was a lot of fun and ended the way we expected it to. So there you go. DJ?
Yeah, man, this was a great wrestling match. I found myself clinically watching this one bell to bell, and I'll probably clinically go back and watch it again because there were so many clever things. AJ Styles proven he's still got gas in the tank. I know there's a lot of speculation that AJ may be wrapping it up. I think he said in some comments where he wakes up every day and he's in pain. It's funny that he got himself like in this phenomenal ripped shape at the twilight of his career. Not that he was ever in bad shape, but you look at him now and he's obviously put on some meat. He's trimmed everything up a bit. He looks incredible. So the match was a lot of fun. This was one of those ones where I had no doubts who was going to win, so I watched this one for the bell-to-bell content.
Rob?
Okay, I got to admit, I was kind of halfway zoned out here throwing this one.
Oh, Jesus. Well,
sorry. Okay. I checked back in for the last few minutes, and, you know, I got to say, you know, kicking out the burning hammer at one.
He was fired up, Rob. He had the power of the Caribbean.
No, let's talk about it.
Adrenaline in his soul.
You know, not a big fan of that.
Let's talk about the kicking out of a burning hammer at one and then it doing the Hulk up spot. That is just, okay, man, if that's what we're doing. The baby face, the, you know, obnoxious baby face allegations will continue, my friend.
Oh, yeah.
I'm here for it. I popped. I thought it was awesome.
But, I do have to go back and watch that again to do it justice. I think I'd woken up early Saturday, and so it was starting to catch up to me at that point. So, there's no fault of either two guys in the match. No, not their fault. But, you know, but the parts I was paying attention to were very good. Yes. Okay.
What a rat. Wow. Put that one on the cereal box. the parts I was paying attention to were very good.
The parts I was paying attention to were very good, and I kind of zoned out. That's Rob's official review of Cody Rhodes versus the phenomenal AJ Styles. A match we have never seen, and we're seeing for the first time, and that's Rob's official review.
I mean, 5 stars.
6 in the Shoot Bear Dome.
Yeah, I was going to say six in M&T Bank Stadium.
I mean, hey, man.
All right.
What are you doing,
Rob?
Parlays?
I was finished. I was doing I'm multitasking here. I was doing a my faction thing on 2K.
Oh, 20. I got you.
Yeah, I mean, but I mean, we're at a kind of interesting place with Cody now because we finished the story, and so, for right now, it's just, it was his first defense. Is this just what it's going to be for the next few months? They're going to give him another challenger and they'll defend again, or are they going to actually get him into like another kind of full blown program?
Well, let me ask you this, Rob. What do you think the chances are? Because you grew up with Dusty Rhodes. And Dusty, while I think for a time Dusty was the guy, and I think Dusty reached a point in his career after he reached a certain age where he's like, okay, I had my time. I did my thing. Who's the next guy? And he always knew Rick was the next guy while being on the lookout for the next guy. What are the chances that Cody is starting to slowly transition to that? He's finished his story. He did the one thing his dad couldn't do. We already know that he's probably being groomed to be at least a talent scout, if not to slide into a role not unlike a Triple H. Do you think that maybe now he's starting to look at the field going, okay, I've got the thing. I don't need to be a part of a big angle anymore. Is he the guy that carries the thing until the next guy comes along?
Well, he's definitely going to get a good size run with the belt this time. I don't think this is going to be a short. It's got to at least go a few more months. I mean.
Oh yeah, it's not going to go less than 6 months.
Yeah, and then plus, I mean, Hunter tends to book these title changes around the bigger pay-per-views. So, he's not having a short run here. I mean, he's probably, because just listening to him talk about this stuff, he thinks about all of this stuff all the time, it seems. So, for right now, they're probably all figuring out what to do, right? Because there is kind of a issue, I guess, in the future, not right now, but just like, okay, well, what else do you do exactly with him? Because everything was so centered around getting that one victory. And so now you take the victory lap for a while now off of that.
Let's expand this discussion a little bit and talk about some guys in the past. Like Cesaro. Okay, let's take Cesaro. We act because remember when Cesaro was getting the push, everybody wanted Cesaro to beat Roman Reigns. Your question was, okay, Cesaro beats Roman Reigns, becomes champ. Then what? I think we're almost in the then what with Cody Rhodes. And Cody Rhodes is answering that. And everybody, it's easy for everybody to say, well, they just defend the title. Well, Cody's out here and he's defending the title. And suddenly you guys don't think that's good. Why? Like, it was okay for Cesaro, because you think Cesaro is going to come out of beating Roman Reigns and go into some massive angle? No, he's going to be out there defending his championship, and that's what Cody Rhodes is doing right now. So why is it what you guys want or say you want for Cesaro, but then they give it to you with Cody and suddenly it's a problem?
Let's be fair. I don't think it's a problem yet.
And I don't either. I don't think it's a problem, but there are some people who are trying to beat that drum.
We're not even close to there yet. I mean, yes, baby faces do run out of steam quicker because, It's just, that's just the nature of everything. But,
the money is in the chase. That's what that means.
Right. It's like the story's finished. So what, you know, he's saying we got to, you know, starting a new one. So what is it though? Or is it just defending the title? That's fine. But yeah. So, but I also think, I mean, it doesn't really matter what the story is. Because the story is just keeping that belt warm for a member of the Anoa'i family.
Okay, so now look, he is personally, just in terms of personal popularity and, you know, business and all of that, he is somebody who you can have just defend the title for a while.
Yeah.
The problem with those other guys was, you know, a big part of their popularity was around people wanting them to get that moment, but there wasn't really a whole lot. There wasn't as much kind of underneath that.
There was no oomph after the moment.
You couldn't get 2 years out of Cesaro chasing that moment.
But also, I mean, like, okay, well, like with, for example, with Kofi, right? There was so much energy behind him to win the title. And then after it happened, you know, what I guess the majority of the energy was kind of left for him. There was a lot of energy behind him as being like the underdog veteran guy to win the title. But as far as, you know, underneath that, there wasn't as much, you know, other than the obvious thing, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And so after he won, all that was really left was the obvious thing.
Yeah.
But the other energy that was there with him behind the push wasn't there. And Kofi wasn't as popular as an individual as Cody is either. Cody's selling all this merchandise and all that stuff. That's not stopping. Okay. That train is not going off the track tomorrow. Okay.
Right.
So he's going to be selling robes and weight belts and all that for, you know, for the foreseeable future. That's not ending. Okay. So I think you do have that with him that you, so his personal popularity is not going to be an issue. The issue I think that will come at some point is people will love him, but they won't be as interested in what he's doing on the television show. And that's a whole different thing. Whereas like with somebody like Cesaro, people have lost interest in him almost immediately after he won.
Yeah.
People aren't losing interest in Cody as an individual. They're not. Okay. We need, anybody's telling you that is just lying.
Yeah, and I don't think Cesaro's merchandise sales ebbed or flowed depending on whether or not he won a match.
No, it did not. No. I guess the only thing is just, you know, are people going to maintain interest in what he's doing on the television show if you just have him defending the title? Right. And that's the biggest thing, because right now, I mean, just looking at numbers and what have you, the thing that this is drawing the most interest on SmackDown is the Bloodline stuff still. So, you know, like I said, he'll be fine. There's nothing to be concerned about with him. It's maintaining interest in what he's doing on the television show. That's the big thing. That's the $1 million question, really. You know, what to do about that. And if it, you know, and when things come to a point where maybe there isn't as much, you know, where that starts to kind of fade.
Mm-hmm.
And now look, we're not there yet. We're not even close to that yet, but it is something. Yeah. If you're booking the show, you do have to think about that. That at some point we do have to cook up something and not, you know, we can do this for a little while with him just having title defenses. But each time you do one, you know, again, it becomes diminishing returns because we know he's going to win, right? That's, I mean, at some point you need to give him a, there has to be at least be some challenger who puts him in some actual jeopardy, which is why I was thinking they would bring Gunther over to SmackDown. But they didn't do that. So now it is kind of like looking at the field over there, you know, okay, who's my, who could actually beat this guy? And I mean, like right now, I mean, if you were to ask me to look at the field on SmackDown and say, okay, who is somebody who could actually, you know, get booked to beat this guy? The only guy I think realistically is, right, I mean, is the guy that he beats.
Yeah. I mean, have Randy Orton over there, but Randy right now is still tied up, you know, deeply with what's left of the bloodline, so.
Yeah, and I think you could do a thing, you know, where Randy turns on him, and you could have Randy win it for like a month and lose it back to him.
You could, yeah, like what they did, what was it, him and, did Drew and Randy? Drew and Randy. Yeah, they traded it back a couple of times. So, yeah, you could absolutely pull that off.
And I honestly would do that because, you know, because that's something you could do. Because look, if your intention is for Cody to be champion at WrestleMania next year, I would personally have somebody like have Randy beat him, hold it for a month, lose it back to him, and in that way, at least you kind of break up the monotony.
Yeah, you know? Have Randy win it at like the November, like at Survivor Series, and then Cody win it right back at the Rumble.
Yeah, yes, exactly. Do something like that, and then that's what I would do because I don't think having him just go straight through to WrestleMania and never be in jeopardy at any point, I don't think that's a good idea. Again, like I said, he'll still sell all the weight belts and everything, but you know, I think you'll start seeing fewer people watching television show because it'll just kind of be like, okay, we know what this is.
Yeah. All right. Oh, guys, have we got anything else on Backlash or have we fairly well kicked all the tires?
That's it, man.
Yeah, right. I will say another thing that's going to be interesting. Right now, I mean, at least I'm in a Facebook group for Black wrestling fans, and there is the conversation about Jade is very interesting because I people are still figuring out, okay, well, how exactly are we supposed to judge her? How exactly are we supposed to critique her? And, you know, all that type of thing. And that's in this particular group. And I mean, right. Nobody's asking the question, but I'm just from reading different comments, they're kind of all over the map. I mean, of course, everybody's pulling for her to succeed. Yes.
Right.
But some people are very matter of fact about what they saw. Some people hand waving are just like, hey, she did great. Yay. And honestly, question is, well, what exactly are we going to call, what are we going to call success? Right. Because right. I mean, other than win all the belts, you know, during her career, I mean, like what are we going to call successful as far as how good of a wrestler she becomes? Right. Is it?
Yeah.
Good match. It's usually good matches and compelling stories.
Yeah. But I mean, is that. Okay. If she.
Rob, look at that woman. We're halfway there. Whoa. Living on a prayer, baby.
Okay. Okay, but I'm okay, man. But if 2 years from now she don't have nothing but multi-woman matches because she can't do a singles match in a big card, what do we call it?
We won't be there.
You don't know until it happens,
right? But we're so early in the game. Yeah. Go ahead, Rob. Finish your thought because I've got a few things.
It's the fact that what's kind of throwing a monkey wrench into the thing is the fact that they put her on the main roster so soon. And that a few months ago, Triple H even said that, well, she was behind in her development. You know, she wasn't where they thought she should be or where she needed to be. But now they went ahead and pulled the trigger. And so if we're going to be honest, that is going to stunt her development. Right? Because now it changes your learning curve. Now you have to. You know, because now, like, you don't have isolated time to just do things over and over and over and over. Right. Now you have to just kind of pick up what you can do to get through what you're doing. And that changes the nature of how you develop. And that, I mean, that's just like, you know, with anything in life, basically, right? If you get thrown in a certain pool, you have to change the way you adapt to and everything. And so, everybody's just kind of wondering, okay, well, what's this going to turn out to be?
Yeah.
Either
of you know where she got her formal training? Like, before she went to AEW, was she an indie? Did they find her on a talent search? What was her background?
I don't know. Because
I'd have to look that up.
Because she originally did talk with WWE, but, you know, she didn't want to, you know, look, she didn't want to spend 3 years in, you know, Orlando.
Well, unfortunately. Maybe 3 years in Orlando. I don't want to knock her because I love Jade. I love the presentation. I see the vision. And bless her heart, she's trying out there, man. She really is. But I don't know. Like I said, and I'm saying this without knowing what kind of formal training she had because the problem. She what?
She went to Mark Henry School.
She went to Mark Henry School. Okay. So somewhere in there, either she didn't date, she wasn't there long enough. Somewhere something got missed or they put her out, they just sent her out too soon, which happens. You know, they WCW at the power plant did this with Goldberg. They said, we've got this incredible looking guy. He's 6 foot, 11'10" and he's damn near 300 pounds of solid muscle. And he looks like a knockoff Stone Cold Steve Austin. Put him on TV yesterday. You know, we've got Jade Cargill who looks like $1 trillion. She's gorgeous. She's athletic. Put her on TV yesterday. And in today's environment, that's not always beneficial. I think you can be critical of her without being negative. And I think that's where people need to start. You know, you can say, okay, she needs work, and you can say she needs work without putting that pressure on her because some of that is very much on WWE. It's like, okay, do we get her on the main roster? Do we test the waters? Do we see how she does? And then do what you did with Mandy Rose. Send her back to NXT for a year. Have a talk with her. Have a sit down. Say, look, we think you're great. We think you're a star. But we think you need to go here to build that back up. And if she approaches it like Mandy Rose did, we're off to the races, buddy. Because, you know, that year down in NXT, Mandy Rose left that whole situation a much different wrestler than she went in.
Yeah, and then also... There are a lot of factors to consider because she's 31.
Mm-hmm.
She already has some outside interests going on. She definitely has some outside aspirations. So to be perfectly honest, you don't know how long you're going to have her.
Right.
And I do think she's kind of more ambitious about that than say Bianca is. I think Bianca would like to do some things, whereas Jade has been pursuing things.
Yeah. Now.
Before she came to WWE. So you don't know exactly how long you're going to have her. You know, it may be 10 years. It may be 5 years. You don't know. So if I understand, so from Hunter's standpoint, I understand it's like, okay, well, we got to get everything we can out of her while we have her here for sure.
Yeah.
So we can't wait. But it's just right now. Like I said, we don't know what she's going to turn into. It's hard to tell.
Yeah.
Cause whereas, I mean, you know, to contrast her with Bianca, when Bianca came up to the main roster, everybody felt pretty sure of what her trajectory was eventually going to be once she got going. Here I think it's much more of a question mark and we don't know. And so, but the thing is, it's a waste of time to spend every time she has a match. It's a waste of time for every time she has a match for us to be having this conversation.
Yeah.
You guys are crazy, guys. She's going to be so fine. It's not even funny. Like,
oh, I'm
this
not
whole,
worried about
like,
it.
Oh, we don't know what the routine's like. We don't know. She got thrown into this pool, thrown into that pool. Guys. She's gonna be fine. She's literally paired with two of the best women on the roster. I'm sure they're traveling together. I'm sure they've got this whole side arrangement for her that, like, her contract, I'm sure, is very different than the average, you know, off-the-street WWE women's wrestler. I think we're just dealing with a whole different ball of wax when it comes to Jade, and that's perfectly fine, because she is, you know, well, look at her. So there you go.
Like you said, I'm rooting for her. I don't want anybody to misunderstand or misinterpret what I'm saying here. I'm absolutely behind Jade Cargill 100%. I want her to be – I want her vision of what she thinks she can do to come to fruition, because I see the vision there.
Yeah, and so do I. It's just – the question is just how do we talk about what we see in front of our faces today?
Like I said, I think you can be critical without being negative.
Yes, and like I said, I think it's a waste. You know, she's going to have matches on TV. It's a waste of time to keep having this conversation every week.
Yeah.
You know, but I just felt like it needed to be had at least at some point. And Jason, you know me. You know I'm the scientist, Jason. I do not say that, you know, everything's going to be great 2 years from now. Just because you know that
he is the father of facts and figures for a reason.
Okay. Remember what have I always told you about the graph that always points up?
Don't trust it.
Yeah, that's right.
All right. Gentlemen, what do you think? Are we good? Call to go home?
Yes.
All right. Well, before we get out of here, I want to invite you to go over to prowrestlingtees.com/thechairshot. From there, you can check out peruse. I'm awful this week. All the t-shirts from your favorite podcasts on the Chairshot Radio Network, including the Mindless Wrestling Podcast. Go check one out. Go pick one up. Go pick up three. Pick one up in soft style. Your body will thank you. Going to go back around the room here and thank my co-hosts, starting with from the Rob the Genius Podcast. Mr. Rob, sorry I screwed up your intro tonight.
That's okay. It's all right.
Hey guys, you guys know my story. You know what I've been through the last week. It's going to be a little bit before I get my head right again. So thank you for that. And from the Bucky's tag team partner, Jason, sir, thank you for dealing with me for another week.
Yes, I will deal with you, and I will deal with the other one over there, doubting Miss Cargill and gloom and doom for the women's division, because, you know, we hate women's wrestling. Meanwhile, I want you all eating crow when she wins a women's championship at the next WrestleMania.
Okay. See how he is, Rob? I can't deal with him tonight. All right.
This is the problem with people, okay? Is that you, okay?
He's speechless. You got to get him off the rails. We got to call it here.
No one's allowed to learn anything. No one's allowed to find out anything. No one's allowed to discover anything. We just have to say, we can't. We can't. We just have to.
We believe, Rob. That's what we do. We believe.
We believe.
We believe.
And on that note, remember, you can call it pro wrestling, you can call it sports entertainment, you can call it whatever you want, but call it in the ring, and we're out of here until next week.
Driving plays a big part in driving the local economy. It helps us all get where we're going and creates good jobs close to home. At Synovus Energy, our refineries in Toledo and Lima are a reliable domestic source of gasoline, diesel, and jet fuel. Plus, more than 2,300 employees and contractors work for us here in Ohio. See how we're helping local communities move forward at Synovus.com. Driving plays a big part in driving the local economy. It helps us all get where we're going and creates good jobs close to home. At Synovus Energy, our refineries in Toledo and Lima are a reliable domestic source of gasoline, diesel, and jet fuel. Plus, more than 2,300 employees and contractors work for us here in Ohio. See how we're helping local communities move forward at Synovus.com.